Welcome to Power Play. We're coming to you live from the Toronto Congress Centre, where in 24 hours, the first ballot results will be announced as the 15-month-long Conservative leadership race hits the finish line. It started as a 14-candidate contest and only ended down one after apparent frontrunner Kevin O'Leary bowed out, saying his victory was impossible without support in Quebec. Coming up, we have blanket coverage of the convention with former Progressive Conservative leader Peter MacKay, the Conservative Party president, our leadership commentator, our strategist, and new polling on the candidates from Nick Nanos. But first, let's take a minute to review the highs and lows of a fight to win the right to challenge Justin Trudeau for the Prime Minister's job in 2019.
Today it's official. This is my contract with the Conservative Party of Canada. I fill this out. In a few hours, one of my team members will fly to Ottawa and register this, and I will become an official member.
Kevin O'Leary and Kelly Leach are embracing elements of Donald Trump's campaign.
I have no interest in other people's sex lives. I have so little interest, I don't want to walk in a parade which celebrates it.
The cheapest way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions is a revenue-neutral carbon tax. My plan starts...
When I become Prime Minister, I'm committed to ensuring that all immigrants, refugees, and visitors to Canada receive a face-to-face interview with a trained immigration officer.
I am going to throw my support behind Maxime Bernier, because I think it's the right thing for the party.
And if Maxime thinks that he's going to get a trade deal with Donald Trump by going down and reading Adam Smith to Donald Trump and make all these things, that's not how you do it. You don't start off negotiations by unilaterally surrendering an entire section of our economy.
You are paying twice the price for dairy, poultry, and eggs, and it is time to stop that.
So in 2008, Andrew, you decided to leave the field of battle, the political team, and become speaker to hold receptions at the Kingsmere Estate.
All right, the expert and sometimes caustic eye of our commentator on this race and those in it is Elise Mills. She's here from Vancouver for her final assessment of the winners, the losers, and I guess the potential for the party going forward under new management. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, okay. I guess looking at that clips, I kind of thought, this party's going to have a hard time. It's a bit of a Humpty Dumpty. Can you put Humpty Dumpty together again under any of these leaders?
Well, so there's a couple of things that really make it so much better for whomever is going to be the new leader. So we have 259,000 new members, paid members, compared to the Liberals who have had free memberships. We have, our leadership candidates have raised 2-1 more than the federal Liberals. We ourselves, the party, has raised $5.6 million. We outgunned the federal Liberals on organization and money big time. So the new leader, whoever they are, has a huge advantage. So the new leader has no reason to not be able to form a strong and competitive campaign platform and a strong team and put the caucus back together after what hasn't really been that too much of a fragmented leadership race, I don't think.
I was like putting you on the spot on these things. Is the fix in for Maxime Bernier? He seems to have a pretty big, is it an insurmountable lead?
Well, you know, in this business, I don't want to use a crystal ball because 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be wrong. But I will say...
That's a very optimistic
assessment.
I know.
My heart wants to say, yeah, I think Maxime Bernier does have this in the bag. But I think the fight that's going on between what I'm interested in is Andrew Scheer, Erin O'Toole, and Lisa Raitt and how they stack up. Mm-hmm. But what we won't know is the percentage of the differences between those candidates, because those to me seemed like the candidates that I thought in the beginning would come out like rockets. Mm-hmm. Scheer has done extremely well in this race. Win or lose, Andrew Scheer has won much more than any other candidate. He's built a brand. He's shown organizational strength. He's brought some issues to the table that I think were important, much like Maxime Bernier. He's been relevant all the way through. He's only 38. He has a long time in this party to grow another leadership if he loses tomorrow.
Who behaved, in your view, as a bit of a loser? Who comes out of this looking worse than when they went in?
Don, that's not very nice to put me on the spot.
I'm sorry.
No, okay, let's start with the obvious. Kelly Leach looks worse than when she came into it. The Kelly Leach that started, that I knew as a conservative, is not the Kelly Leach today. I think she's going to have to answer to her caucus, to her friends, to the people that have supported her until she deviated onto a road that I think was cheap and somewhat vindictive politics, not reflective of the Conservative Party that I want to be part of. I also think that Michael Chong's going to have some questions for himself himself. He came out worse as well. You know, he's been a star, as you know, a policy star, policy wonk in our party. But something has shifted for him. And then there's Aaron O'Toole, who for some reason came in as a new MP, like a, you know, the new generation in this leadership campaign, and now looks like establishment. I mean, it's shocking. And so he's going to have to do a little brand repair as well, especially, I think, towards the Scheer campaign after that nice little snipe he took at the leadership debate.
Oh, yeah, ridiculing him for being a speaker. Oh, running away from the battle.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about the speeches. We got the speeches starting in a couple hours. Do they matter, this thing? I mean, aren't the votes already pretty much cast?
I think the speeches are for TV. What's happening today and tomorrow, apart from the vote, obviously, is really the Conservatives recognizing the need to repair the relationship with the media, build a leadership contest in the next 2 days that is very media-friendly, that encourages more interest from the general public. I mean, you're the window, or you're the connection for us to the general public, to Canadians everywhere. The speeches are really sort of the last-ditch effort. Most Conservatives have already voted, although I actually haven't. I'm voting tomorrow.
So and the speeches will sway you?
No, they won't, unfortunately. But it'll be interesting to see what each candidate does with 10 minutes. Let's hope it's formidable.
What? Yeah, exactly. What's job one for the new leader, in your view?
I think job one for any leader of any party after a leadership race, whether it's the way ours was, which is sort of smallly divisive, or you've seen something like what happened with Christy Clark out in British Columbia, the number one job is to repair fences. You don't need kingmakers anymore. You need bridge builders. You need policy wonks. You need people that have institutional knowledge. You've got to assemble a really strong team. And then you have to get into the business of working with the party, understanding what are the needs are going to be for 2019. Financially, the party's in great shape, and I'm hoping they continue on that road, but it's really going to be a lot of heavy lifting. Plus, how do you follow Rona Ambrose and that amazing legislative agenda that she put together? Her points about what to do in opposition versus what the Liberals did when they were in opposition was so relevant, so important. Whoever becomes leader needs to heed her advice.
Good point. Well, go out there and mix with all the people you just called losers. All right. Thanks, Elise.
Thanks.
Appreciate you coming on. All right. Let's get a state of the party snapshot as the post-merger Conservatives look to elect their second leader to replace Stephen Harper. Scott Lamb is the president of the party. Welcome to the show. Yeah. Energy, excitement, not quite. You got cartoons, conventions to compete with here. But yeah,
it's great, Don, and thank you very much for having me on your show. We're very excited at this convention to elect our leader. It's a record membership sales, records that in terms of the voter turnout. It's going to be really great.
Tell me about why at least one MP, Diane Watts out in BC, is complaining that they didn't get the ballots in time to mail them back to you, and she's actually having to bring ballots to Toronto to file them with you tomorrow. Why'd that happen?
It's a mail-in ballot, and so we're relying on Canada Post to be able to deliver them on time, and unfortunately some of them won't make it, but the overwhelming majority of them have made it, and again, we're going to set a record for the most votes cast in a Canadian leadership race ever, and it's really quite exciting that we're able to
do that. What kind of turnout? You're getting about 50% turnout? Is that what you're anticipating?
That's right. And the first time we had our leadership race back in 2003, we had about a 37% turnout. And when you look at typical mail-in ballots, over 50% is very, very good.
I mean, I don't want to be critical, like the speeches are fun, but the speeches are kind of pointless, aren't they? Everyone's voted.
Well, actually, they'll be voting tomorrow. You can come down to the Toronto Congress Centre and actually vote in person. And we have voting stations also across the country, so people can vote in person.
Well, you're a political animal. You miss the hoopla, the, you know, the thunder sticks, the moving around the convention floor as people shift from weather, because you don't get that momentum building, because everyone's already decided what the momentum will be.
Yeah, I agree that the old style hoopla is a lot of fun, but parties in general in Canada are much more democratic these days. It's a one-person, one-vote system, and once you get a one-person, one-vote system, you don't get delegates to a convention, and you have to figure out a way in which to reach out to them and get their votes in, and a mail-in ballot is one way to do it.
You start funneling the votes in tomorrow morning. The results come out around 5:30 Eastern.
Yeah.
Are we going to have any issues like the New Democrats did in their convention? Electronics can be a tricky thing on a ballot count.
Yeah, I hear you, and we're doing everything to make sure that doesn't happen, and with lots of redundancies in the voting machines and really a small army of volunteers that are going to be working right starting early tomorrow, right through the day. And so we're confident we'll be able to deliver it on time.
You've got a lot of steps in security to make sure everyone that votes is entitled to vote and actually a living human being. But you do have at least one investigation underway. Yeah. What's happened with that? There was a number of candidate or ballots that were suspicious.
Yeah, early on we had about 1,300 ballots that we didn't believe were actually paid for by the members. And that's been handled by Elections Canada, and we haven't heard anything since.
What's your prediction? How many ballots do you think?
Well, the technical ballots of each one could go to 9 or 10.
Oh.
But we may present them in a short form, so you won't see absolutely every ballot. We'll release those in due course, but that's a lot of ballots to go through.
All right, Scott, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Pleasure. Right.
Okay, the man many expected would be the current frontrunner in this race, well, he didn't enter. Peter MacKay was the final Progressive Conservative leader, and he held several senior cabinet ministries in the Harper government. Peter MacKay now joins me on The Riser. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don. Nice to be with you.
Any regrets? Your name's not on this ballot?
No regrets at all. I'm glad to be here in this capacity and to take it in from this vantage point as opposed to being in the thick of it. So no regrets at all.
You're not supporting anyone, are you?
Like, I'm not. I'm not aligned. I'm neutral. I made that decision when I chose not to run that I would support them all. And I've tried to do that. I've been to a lot of different events throughout this campaign and gone out to various events that candidates were holding around the country. And I must say it's been an invigorating process, I believe, for our party.
It's interesting. You were sort of the founding father of the Conservative Party when you did the Progressive Conservatives and the Canadian Alliance merge. And you always were concerned that the progressive wing still have a toehold in the Conservatives. And I wonder, are you worried that some of these candidates wouldn't reflect a progressive presence if they win the leadership tomorrow?
Well, look, I'll answer it this way. Whoever the eventual winner is going to have to go back to the membership in a policy convention and, let's say, retest some of the positions that have been staked out during this contest. Mm-hmm. And so I'm safe in my assessment in saying that the membership will still have its say. So both process and policy, it's very democratic in the Conservative Party. That was baked into the original formula of the unification of Conservatives. Mm-hmm. And it was important, Don, because it ensures that every riding, every constituency in the country has equal say and equal input, just as every member of Parliament, in theory, is equal. Now, there are firsts among equals, as the saying goes, but in our party, this formula, I believe, has worked well. It's a formula that helped us form government, and I believe it's also an important formula that will lead us back to government after this process concludes.
Do you find this formula kind of diminishes the momentum and the hoopla of these conventions? Like, do you think there's a better way, or is this the ideal solution to getting?
Well, you're talking about two different things. The policy process and the policy convention sometimes can be, for those who don't follow politics closely, it may seem a little bit esoteric and convoluted. This process with the single transferable ballot has not been tried in our party before. So this is new. This is a new construct. I think we'll wait and see how things turn out before we're too harsh in our assessment. The old-fashioned conventions, when I ran in 2002-03, where you had members crossing, from one camp to another and deals being made, that was much more kinetic and there was much more activity. It was exciting to watch in some ways. It was more of a sporting event. So, people have their preferences as to the type of process and leadership conventions. I like the personal interaction that occurs on the floor at that style convention.
I guess what I'm curious, some of these candidates have come out with fairly thick policy positions.
Yes.
Like, I think Erin O'Toole's got a 50-plus page policy position. Are you saying that by having to test these back with the political members, that these positions really don't matter? Do you think that they're all subject to change without notice?
No, I don't think I would say that they don't matter. I would say that there is going to be a further vetting process before you go to the electorate in an actual general election. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that a leadership campaign is a test run, but to some extent, it's a sequence of various events that get you to the finish line. Erin, Chris Alexander, Andrew Saxon, a number of them have very thoughtful policy books, And they've had to bounce those off one another, too, in a very crowded field. So that rigorous testing that's gone on, I think, will help ensure that whoever comes out of this convention as the leader is really going to be, you know, primed and ready to hit the road. And there's going to be a lot of heavy lifting. One observation is there won't be as much, perhaps, necessity to heal. I think that this has been a pretty cordial affair.
Okay.
Somewhat surprising with that many in the field and the diversity of positions on a lot of policy.
Final question. I always ask this every time I interview. Political comeback, possible or not?
Oh, look, Don, when I left, I said I wouldn't close doors or burn bridges. I've tried still not to do that. So, look, politics gets in your blood, and I follow it closely. I'll always have an interest.
Well, I hear a door opening, all right. All right, Peter, thanks for coming on. Appreciate this.
Don,
all right.
My pleasure.
Coming up, we have exclusive new polling on the big challenges the party faces against the Liberals on key issues and your take on the worst Conservative candidate to become Prime Minister. Please stay with us. All right, we're still at the Toronto Congress Center. This is where the Conservative Leadership Convention is being held and where tomorrow, about this time, we'll start getting results on the first ballot anyway on this very hard-fought and divisive leadership race. Well, semi-divisive, as some people say. All right, we are going to now, it's almost over, as we said, and we have a snapshot of how Canadians are viewing the Conservative leadership race now that we're really almost at the finish line. We have exclusive new numbers gathered this week by Nick Nanos. It's not necessarily a pretty picture as the Conservatives set out to rebuild themselves. Nick joins us from our Ottawa bureau. Nick, I want to start because we've been talking a little bit about how the party reunites after this. You asked your people to test what the Conservative leadership candidate would best able to reunite the party. What did you find?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The poll that we've done for CTV, which was just completed last night, we asked Canadians who they thought which Conservative Party leader or candidate would most likely be able to unite the Conservative Party after this. And at the top of the list was unsure. But beyond unsure, when we got into actual candidates, we saw that Maxime Bernier was at the top of the list in terms of a candidate that could unite the Conservative Party, followed by Lisa Raitt and Andrew Scheer. So those would be the top three, at least from the perspective of Canadians, on who they thought could potentially reunite the Conservative Party, but still, a lot of Canadians are unsure who could do it.
I know, but look at Kelly Leach on that. 1.2% is all she got, so clearly they see her as a very divisive force, which leads us to our next question. Who would be the worst Prime Minister amongst the Conservative candidates? Well, drum roll, please. Look who's at the top spot, Nick.
Ay-yi-yi, how's that for an answer? You know, when we ask Canadians who's at the top of the list, you know, obviously unsure does very well, but after unsure, when Canadians think of a name, more than one out of every four Canadians specifically cite Kelly Leach as the candidate they think would make the worst prime minister from the current kind of field of candidates that are running for the Conservative leadership. It speaks to the fact that, yes, she did get a spotlight on herself. She has been very combative. She's focused on the core. But obviously, there's been some sort of collateral damage to her personal brand because of the type of campaign that she's fought in order to try to win the leadership.
Of course, one of the overarching challenges for any federal party in power now is being able to work with Donald Trump in the White House, and there will be at least a year you'll have to do that. Excuse me. And we did ask the question on which party would be best able to work with Trump. What did you find out?
You know, what's interesting, when we asked Canadians to pick the party they thought that would be best at dealing with Trump, actually the Liberals outgunned, so to speak, the Conservatives on this by about 5 percentage points. And, you know, there's a significant demographic gender difference. If you are a woman, right, you're more likely to think that the Liberals would do a good job. However, if you are a Canadian who is a man, you're more likely to think that the Conservatives could do a better job at dealing with Donald Trump than Justin Trudeau and the Liberals.
Finally, I found this one kind of surprising. Who would be the best able to work to manage the economy of the parties? Look what you found out. It's still the Liberals.
Yeah. Don, this is a killer question for the Conservatives. Because you know what? unless they do well in terms of the brand on economic stewardship, they're going nowhere in terms of the next election and challenging the Liberals. When we look at this particular number, you can see that the Liberals score better than the Conservatives in terms of managing the economy, and that's not good news for the Conservatives. You know, maybe the first piece of work for the new Conservative leader will be to focus on the economy and jobs and managing tax dollars. Get back on that in order to try to take on Justin Trudeau and the Liberals.
You know, Nick, went over. You put out a lot of numbers today. We didn't have time to do them all. But one thing I was struck by was how few Canadians are really thinking any of these candidates has the right stuff. What would you glean from all those responses?
There's just too much on the political menu for the Conservatives. You know, I think it would have probably served the party well if it had some sort of process where candidates could have dropped out, where there could have been 2, 3, 4, or even 5 main challengers that kind of duked it out. I think it would have made for better television and better political engagement. But, you know, I think with a long list of 13, many Canadians tuned out. I don't think they're going to tune in until tonight and tomorrow. And hopefully they'll see something on the political menu that might be appealing, because Canadians want to know whether there will be a new government in waiting, a new prime minister in waiting, that could potentially challenge the Liberals. And right now, they're not sure.
All right. So that's why these conventions are important. They do focus public attention and get people thinking about someone else. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, The thing is, think of this as an infomercial. The Conservatives can either knock it out of the park, or they can have a foul ball. And I think they're hoping that they can knock it out of the park tonight and tomorrow with Canadians.
We will see. Nick Nanos, thanks for joining us. Appreciate that. Coming up, we will break away from our convention coverage with our weekending strats, and we'll get the latest on our globe-trotting prime minister as he mixes and mingles at the G7 summit in Italy. Please stay with us. Welcome back. There's other news happening as Prime Minister Trudeau continues his summit tour. The leaders have moved on from NATO to the G7 meeting in Italy. Let's bring in CTV's Ottawa Bureau Chief Joyce Napier for the latest. Joyce?
The statement coming out of the White House ahead of the G7 summit is, expect a robust discussion. And it sets the tone for this two-day meeting here in Taormina. Robust because U.S. President Donald Trump, unlike his 6 counterparts, does not believe in climate change. Neither does he believe in free trade, 2 of the most important issues that will be discussed here.
There's no doubt that this will be the most challenging G7 summit in years.
So will a consensus even be possible by the end of the summit? It's hard to tell.
I don't have a crystal ball.
But Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland insists that climate change is a Canadian priority, and that won't change. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau met with the new French president, a like-minded leader who just appointed a gender-balanced cabinet.
Anybody like some water?
The U.S. president is not big on diplomacy, and it's no secret that the other members of the G7 and their delegations know to expect the unexpected. Just yesterday, the U.S. president lectured his counterparts at a NATO meeting and has no qualms about speaking his mind day and night. But one thing the 7 leaders are likely to agree on is the urgent need to cooperate on counterterrorism and on ways to combat violent fundamentalism in the wake of the Manchester bombing. That will be British Prime Minister Theresa May's plea here.
I think it is important that as leaders we have shown our fierce determination to ensure that we use every tool available to us to fight against terrorism and protect our people.
This summit is a first for 4 out of the 7 leaders, including May and Trump. Some observers already calling it the summit of the new faces. Joyce Napier, CTV News, Taormina, Sicily.
All right. Thank you, Joyce. It's time for the weekending Wizards of Strategic Insight. We're here to talk about the convention and unconventional meetings abroad for our Prime Minister. From Regina, someone who really should be here causing trouble, NDP-orientated Sally Hauser of Navigator. And here on the convention floor, small-C conservative commentator Jerry Nichols and liberal-leaning Greg McEachern from Environics Communications. Hey, Jerry, nice to see you in person.
It's awesome to be here.
Awesome.
Actually, awesome. At the desk. That is so cool.
I'm glad you're happy. Look, I was looking at that group shot there, and there was only one leader smiling, and that was Justin Trudeau. I don't know if he's having fun, but I guess I just want to sort of get a sense from you three, how well he's doing. He's almost getting to the point, surprisingly, where he's considered one of the elder statesmen because things are changing so quickly. Sally, what's your take on how Justin Trudeau's faring at both of these summits so far?
Well, you know, the Liberals and Jerry Butts love to have Prime Minister Trudeau on the road. He does well there. There is plenty of opportunities for photo ops, whether spontaneous or staged. So I know this is their happy place. Now, you know, the bar for performing well here, as long as you're not body slamming a reporter or shoving a fellow NATO ally out of the way, is fairly low. So, you know, it's... You know, the way that Trudeau is presenting himself, it's positive for Canada, but, you know, are they really accomplishing anything here? The G7 meetings are often pretty heavy on the photo op side. I think what Joy said in the report earlier, the amount of new faces is not just, it doesn't just add a variable in terms of getting to know new world leaders, but I think it's also an indicator of shifts in terms of global politics, both in Europe and at home. I think for the Liberals, you know, they often love to portray themselves as real leaders on the climate change file. We see that they're still having a little difficulty getting themselves getting their heads around the methane file today. Right. So I'd like to see a little more at home before they pontificate abroad.
Well, Jerry, I think you probably got a slightly different view. What do you make of Justin Trudeau? Is he bowling you over with awe and shock?
He always does.
I mean,
he's adorable. I mean, and this is why Shelley's right. This is why he does so well with these things. Because these things are tailor-made for his strengths as a politician. He gets to show off his socks. You know, he gets to, you know, pose with other leaders, and he looks like a leader. And this is the advantage he has as prime minister.
Yeah,
is he can go on these junkets, and he looks like a statesman. He looks like a leader. The other leaders, the opposition, can't do that. So this gives him a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Will it help him? Yeah, it'll probably help him in terms of his stature, maybe help him in the polls. So yeah, I mean, in terms of photo ops, you know, this is what Justin. Of course, I must say, he now has a little bit of competition from the French president.
Yes.
He might not be the cutest kid in the block anymore. He has some real competition.
Well, hear that, Greg? He's adorable, apparently, Jerry says.
I just like when we get Jerry's vote. It's awesome.
not likely.
You know what? I you know, Trudeau could go into this and say, you know, because his early contact with Trump, and say to the rest of the members of the club, you know the stuff about the new kid? I was right. See, just wait till you hear from them. I think there's also a huge opportunity there for Trudeau in that, and we've talked about this before, Don, no matter what happens with NAFTA, this does perhaps create some opportunity for Canada with other markets, with other countries.
Right.
And it seems that Trudeau does have a really good working relationship with a lot of the other leaders there, and that's probably good for Canada.
I want to get your thoughts on photo ops, because we've always seemed to get, in terms of stories, as Donald Trump pushing someone out of the way, or Donald Trump not holding his wife's hand, and this sort of thing. Is this what we're down to now? I mean, there's some serious business being done.
Yeah, there's been a lot of study of this, and I think, you know, even going back to the previous prime minister with his 24/7, a lot of people consume their news via images. So I think images are very, very important. That's the only way people are going to see them. I think what the Trudeau people need to remember is that when they're showing Trudeau in these situations, they're forgetting to make the comparison, perhaps because of sunny ways, that these are very different than what Mr. Harper would have done. You would not have seen Mr. Harper jog, you know, through a prom, because first of all, well, let's put jogging aside, and I am a big glass house on that one. But the thing is, you didn't see Harper among ordinary Canadians all that often.
All right, I want to move along. We are at a convention. Mm-hmm. You guys have all seen enough conventions. You too, Sally, of course. And I'm trying to size up whether this is a good convention, like if whether the format works, whether the hoopla is going to be enough to keep people excited. I mean, Sally, you've been to these. You've been to the NDP one particularly. Is this going to be a flop, a fizzle, or fun?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm really sorry that I'm not there with you guys today, because as you all, I'm sure, can appreciate, there's nothing I would rather do more than spend my weekend at a conservative convention.
Yes.
You know, I think this is what they need. At the end of it, this is the big show after, you know, the 27 months that this race has been going on with the 57 candidates that we have. You know, so this is where people are actually going to be tuning in. I think maybe for a lot of people for the first time, and particularly, you know, for better or for worse, since Kevin O'Leary dropped out, I think the interest has actually dropped off a bit. So, you know, hopefully the Conservatives will certainly be hoping that all eyes are on them this weekend. There is an NDP leadership debate on Sunday. I'll certainly be tuning into that.
There is.
But they'll want to be getting banged for bang for their buck this weekend. Right. The Conservatives will, for sure.
Jerry, I know you're just kind of guy that lives for the hospitality suites, mm-hmm. and usually ends up closing them all. I'm just kidding.
That's the only reason I came here.
Yeah. I mean, do you like what you've seen? Are you sensing? I mean, there's serious competition for this convention from a cartoon convention just in the same building. I don't know whether that says something about what this convention's all
well,
about.
Well, you know, I was afraid I might get elected by accident because the rules are so weird. Is this an exciting convention? No. This is the Conservative Party, folks. It's not the exciting party. It has to be bland by definition. I know a lot of people in the media don't like that. They want it to be, you know, excitement and drama. I know the NDP, Sally might speak to this, is doing a American Idol style leadership where they vote, which might be more interesting. But I, you know, to me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's only whatever bump comes from an exciting convention won't last that long. I mean, the thing is, you want to pick a leader.
Right.
And that's the main thing. And it depends on how good the leader is and how successful the party will be.
Then there's the party, the Liberals.
Well, yeah, this feels more like a trade show than a convention. I walked in and I was a bit surprised by the, like, I've been to a lot.